Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
A lady who has been all over this search and has written some good stuff about it joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. She's Mary Kay Cabot from The Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hey, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are well. I kind of had Tommy Reese at the top of my list, thinking that this makes sense. I understand it, and I think I know how it might work. Did it surprise you? Do you think he's the... I think he's the guy to help Kevin Stefanski get it back to where Kevin had it. Is there more to it than that?
Well, I wasn't surprised because we had been hearing that Tommy is sort of a up-and-coming name in NFL offensive coaching circles. He's been highly endorsed by Nick Saban, who he worked under at Alabama, and Mike Vrabel. We know that Mike probably would have asked for an OC interview with him. So he's kind of an up-and-comer, and so I'm not surprised. But when Kevin interviewed Daryl Bevel and Clint Kubiak, with whom he worked in Minnesota, both of those guys, I thought maybe he might go a little bit more experienced with those two guys. They've been coordinators. They've been play callers. But with Tommy, as you mentioned, Kevin maybe can get back to calling plays again. I don't know if he will or not, but that will be one option. And then Tommy is very well versed in working with young quarterbacks.
All right. So what is your gut on who's going to be calling plays here this season?
You know, I'm going to say for right now, I guess I'll say maybe Kevin, and then they can let Tommy really focus on helping get the new quarterbacks acclimated and up to speed. And if it's a rookie, you know, just used to the NFL and all those kinds of things. So I'm going to go Kevin for now.
I think it's interesting, Mary Kay, that in a year that is just vital, absolutely critical, career-defining for Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, that the offensive coordinator is going to be a guy who's never been an offensive coordinator in the NFL and who has 2 years of NFL coaching experience. To me, that either screams they think they really have the next up-and-coming Ben Johnson, or you know, young offensive coordinator is going to take the league by storm, or that Kevin's just going to take it over and Tommy's going to help him get there. But the idea of such a critical year for Kevin tying himself to a young offensive coordinator, to me, is pretty fascinating.
Well, you're right. And that's why I thought, you know, there are several schools of thought, different ways you could have gone about this. If you hire a Daryl Bevel, then basically you are allowing him to run the show, maybe not call plays necessarily, but to run the show in the same way that Jim Schwartz does over on the defensive side of the ball. You can just let it go, and it will run itself with not itself, but Daryl Bevel can run it from top to bottom because he's been a coordinator for so many years in the NFL. So that would have been one way to go about it. But they must see something in Tommy Reese that tells them that he can handle this job. They must see it. And once again, I do think that it signals a return to Kevin possibly calling plays.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us. Mary Kay with a story out right now on Cleveland.com about the promotion of Tommy Reese to offensive coordinator. And Mary Kay, we both connected these dots. Your first line, if the Browns decide to draft Alabama quarterback Jalen Milroe at number two, they have just the man to coach him up. Because Tommy Reese was the offensive coordinator at Alabama in the first year that Milroe was the starter. Are those dots something we should connect, or is that just coincidental?
I think it's more than coincidental. I don't know that it necessarily means that they will draft him, but he's under consideration, as are all of the top five or six quarterbacks, or maybe even more quarterbacks in this draft. And Tommy is well-versed in all things college quarterback. That's what he did. That's what he was. He was a winning quarterback at Notre Dame. He coached winning quarterbacks at Notre Dame and at Alabama. He's coached Jalen Milroe. So you're right. I went heavy with that right at the top of my story. I thought, you know, I actually did get to like halfway through the story. I had mentioned him high, and then I didn't get back to it until later.
Yeah.
And as I was writing it, I was like, oh, no. Let's go heavy Milroe at the top. So I kind of started over, and I thought, geez, this could really be something. And if they do decide to go that route, then absolutely 100%, they probably have maybe the best guy or one of the best guys in the country to coach him up.
So they needed an offensive line coach. It took them very little time to hire Mike Bloomgren, who has a background that didn't scream, this is the easy hire. They needed an offensive coordinator. They quickly hire one who doesn't scream that this guy has that huge background. What do these two guys combined give Kevin Stefanski that will be an improvement over Andy Dickerson and Ken Dorsey? What do you think?
You know, we don't know, and that's the whole thing. And why do I say that? Because some of his hires have not worked out.
Yeah.
He's now on his third offensive coordinator in the past 3 years. And he also fired his defensive coordinator. I mean, this is only he's only heading into his sixth season. So this is a lot of change.
And special teams, too.
And special teams. This is a lot of change in the assistant/coordinator realm for him. So we don't know for sure how this is going to work out. As you mentioned, Tommy, although he's got a great reputation, and Mike Vrabel would have probably called him up for an interview for OC for the Patriots, we just don't know how he's going to perform on the job. We don't know if he's going to call plays. We don't know yet. And right now, I think we have to be in wait-and-see mode with all of that, because so far, we know that Kevin has had to change it up a number of times on his staff, in all phases of the game.
Mary Kay, if you were sitting there with the two spot, and I know this is a long way off on that, but how serious do you think they're going to be about maybe drafting a quarterback at two?
I think very serious. I would say very serious, because you don't hope to be drafting this high in the future. And if they see somebody there that they think can play winning ball for them either this year or over the next couple of years, then for sure they have to go ahead and pull the trigger on it. I haven't started to really do my diligence on the quarterbacks yet in terms of watching film, talking to people. I am going to be going to the Senior Bowl here in a couple of weeks. Maybe it's even less than a couple of weeks now. But headed down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. They always say the draft starts in Mobile, and it kind of does. So that's when I'll start to get a handle on what the NFL thinks about these quarterbacks, what I think about these quarterbacks, maybe what the Browns think, but we're going to hear a lot of conflicting reports coming out over the next couple of months. So just remember that. It's silly season where everyone is going to be trying to throw everybody off with what's going on with those top few picks. So, you know, you try to sort through it as best you can, and I will do the best that I can to deliver the best info that I can for everyone.
Give me your thought on this thing. Browns have their highest-rated quarterback, say the 15th player on their board. But they think that guy can play in the league for 10 years, 12 years, and be an effective starter. They have to take him at number two.
I would, yes, because you don't want to risk someone else coming up and getting that guy. You cannot do that. If you see a quarterback that you like in the first round of the draft, you probably should just go ahead and take him at number two. Is my thinking on it. If you think there's a winning quarterback there, don't risk trying to move back. Like I said, there's so much gamesmanship that goes on at this time of year between now and the draft that you just don't know what anyone else is going to be thinking or who might want to jump your route and do something different. And I remember so much of that going on back in 2017, back in 2018, when the Browns had those number one picks. So I would definitely go ahead your guy at number two if you like someone enough to do that.
I would too, Mary Kay. And the idea doesn't sit well with me. You know, if you think there are 10, 12 better football players, but you have such the pressing need. But you have to evaluate that guy, whoever it is you're going to take, and think, yeah, he can do this job for 10, 12 years in the NFL. And that's where I wonder, is that where Tommy Rees is going to come into play in helping to scout this guy? Is it going to be Kevin? Is it Andrew Berry? I wonder what decision-making process they're going to use to decide yay or nay on a quarterback if at number two.
Well, I'm sure Tommy is going to be heavily involved in that process because he played the position and he has just recently coached in the college ranks. And so I think he's going to come in tremendous handy in this process. It doesn't mean that he's going to pull the trigger or make the final decision or any of those things, but he'd be very key. And when you have somebody coaching that position that has actually played it, I think, like I said, I think he won like 23 games at Notre Dame, and then he was signed by the Commanders as an undrafted free agent. So he's played quarterback at a high level. He knows what he's looking at, and there are not many NFL coaches who have actually necessarily played the position. And when you have one that has, I think it's invaluable when it comes to a time like this.
Mary Kay Cabot, great piece on Cleveland.com right now, talking all about breaking all down Tommy Rees being promoted to offensive coordinator. Go read it. Mary Kay, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot, Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Let's go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You hear him calling Browns games on the Browns Radio Network. I think he just had a conversation with somebody who's going to be making some big decisions coming up.
Yes.
He's Mr. Andrew Siciliano. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
Okie doke.
How are things?
Things in L.A. are different. I would say I'm very grateful, beyond blessed, and I don't use that word very often, to be in a neighborhood in a part of town that is right now totally unaffected other than horrible air.
Wow.
So sun is shining and ash is falling, but in the meantime, everything is okay here. I could look out my window and, you know, look up north to the Palisades, and obviously it is not there. The big fear is the winds are coming back. Last night they were not as bad as expected. So that is great news, but it could very well be as bad today because, you know, the number one thing, you know, there's a lot of getting mad and a lot of unpacking to do, which is totally understandable and well warranted. But the number one thing here is the winds last week, and we had 70 mile an hour wind gusts last week. So, you know, you could take a lighter and throw it in the grass next to your driveway. 70 mile an hour winds will make that exceedingly dangerous in about 10 seconds.
Mm. Well, hang in there. And
we're good. We're good. Thank you.
That is good news. Tommy Rees, offensive coordinator, kind of seemed like, to me, it seemed like the hire that was going to be made. Did you think that? And are you surprised that some of the other guys who were interviewed, Kubiak with a history, Bevel with a history, with Kevin Stefanski, weren't the pick?
Not necessarily surprised, but I think those three were clearly the leaders in the clubhouse, and I think those three all send the same message, or would have sent the same message to the fan base when asking aloud, well, what is this going to look like? It's going to look like, I think, a lot like it had in previous years when Kevin was calling the plays. And I said this with Nathan and Bo yesterday. The big thing for me is still trying to unpack why exactly Kevin gave up play calling. I don't know if there's some horrible secret behind it or anything like that. He needed at that moment to kind of be in the other rooms in the building, right? To be with the O-line, to be with the defense, to not just be the play caller and working with the quarterbacks. I absolutely respect that. The season was kind of spiraling out of control, and he felt that was the best move. Not a knock on Ken Dorsey. The results were what the results were. I prefer, there's a reason he was two-time head coach of the year. I prefer Kevin's offense. I think a lot of people did. I think Joel Bitonio and Jack Conklin's exit interviews both reflect that. And I think this is kind of a return to that, as opposed to trying to fix the
square peg round hole.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I want my first cup of coffee, not even halfway through it. So thank you for finishing my thoughts.
Anything for you, my friend. Do the Browns, and Conklin said yes, Bitonio said yes, do the Browns have better pieces to run that than what they tried to run this year? And what
absolutely
in just the offensive line or in other spots as well?
That's a good question. I think notably the offensive line, and listen, I do not pretend to be and likely never will be an offensive line expert, but the O-line people that I talk to, I'll take Brian Baldinger, for example. We all love Baldy, and Baldy is the world's most interesting former offensive lineman, as I used to call him and still do. Baldy says, listen, you go back in the day and you put Teller and Petonio and Posick or even Treader, and his word was meat grinder. He goes, the middle of that O-line was a meat grinder, and you knew what they were doing. I'll even go back to Monday. I was doing a show on Sirius XM NFL Radio with Logan Ryan, the well-traveled two-time Super Bowl champion, the veteran defensive back. And he made a point of saying it as well. This was before the Tommy Rees announcement that, back in the day, that was a hard offense and a well-coached offense to prepare for. So, yeah, I think it fits the O-line better, certainly. But look, you also need more pieces around that O-line. Jerry Jeudy, David Njoku are pieces that you love. You need to find the right mix in the backfield. I do think Jerome Ford absolutely had his moments this year where he's going to be part of that conversation. You also have a lot of draft picks as well, and it is a very deep running back class where you can take a swing of the third, fourth round. Remember, Jerome was a fifth-round pick, if memory serves, where, you got to add some new faces back there as well to mix it up, because no one these days, save for the Eagles, although they're pretty deep back there, survives with only one great back.
What do you think the quarterback room is going to look like next year as far as experienced players?
How about trade a second overall pick to the Cowboys for a bunch of picks and Dak Prescott and the Cowboys and Deion could draft Shador. How about that? You want that?
All right, I like it. Done. Good job, Andrew.
I saw that one.
Yeah.
It made me chuckle, and I thought, could you eliminate that? I don't know.
I think you can eliminate it, like talking seriously here. I think you can, in that contract for both franchises is basically untradeable. Dak 70, 80 this year, whatever it was, in the first year of his deal that got done the morning of kickoff, remember, in Cleveland before week one. And so, that's a ridiculous cash up front that would just kill their cap with the acceleration. And he's due $132.5 million cash the next 3 years, just paragraph five cash. The Browns can't take that deal, and I don't think the Cowboys could trade that deal. So, no, forget about it. That ain't going to happen.
What if the Cowboys wanted to move on from Dak and bring in Sanders? Could they trade for Deshaun Watson's contract? And could you do that?
That Dak is a far more interesting conversation that is above my pay grade. I would have to sit down and crunch the numbers at the top of my head. I don't know how the cap acceleration would work on the way out.
I don't know either.
For the Cowboys, and could they take that money on? I don't think they could. I don't. But what does it look like, to answer your question? It looks like a veteran on March 12th, and I would have to assume a rookie at the top of the draft. And you have to have the open conversation with that veteran, and that veteran isn't an idiot. It's not like a situation in Atlanta last year where Kirk Cousins went in fully, not calling him an idiot, but fully going in believing that at the ninth overall pick, the Atlanta Falcons are not drafting a quarterback. They're paying me $100 million over 2 years. So with whomever that conversation is had, that you'd need to be honest that you could take somebody at two. I think the bigger question, guys, is there a quarterback you really believe in at two? This isn't 2018. This isn't 2023. I'm not trying to lower expectations, but the question is here, do you really believe in one of the two guys that you're willing to hand in the card? Like, this is the guy. Or are you doing it only because you feel like you have to?
Menigan was shaking his head in agreement with you, no. And then when you said, because you have to, he shook his head, yes. I ask you this. Let's say, and I asked Mary Kay Cabot, was with us earlier, and I asked Mary Kay, if you have a quarterback as your 15th, 16th, 17th guy on your board, but you think he's going to be able to play in the league for a good period of time and can be a starting quarterback, you just think there are other guys who are better, but he does play quarterback. Do you take him? I think you almost have to, Andrew, if you deem him, hey, this guy can play in the league well for 10 years.
So to answer the question, I believe you do. But do realize here that the quarterbacks at the top of this draft who could turn into 10-year starters and franchise saviors wherever they go are ranked, and I was talking to my guy Daniel Jeremiah about this yesterday, are ranked like in the 20s, 30s for players overall on the big board.
Yeah, see, now they are. That's scary, isn't it?
But it's not the first year. That happens all the time, yeah. Believe it or not. It's not often that you have Trevor Lawrence or an Andrew Luck where it's, okay, no, he's the number one guy, regardless of position, period, full stop. Those don't come around that often. Bo Nix was not, where was he taken? 11? He was 12. Not the 11th,
yeah.
12th, thank you. Mm-hmm. He was not the 12th best player on anyone's board, I'm going to guarantee you. However, you needed a quarterback. He had a first-round grade. Well, grades are subjective. He was projected to go in the first round. Look how many quarterbacks go in the second round. Not many, because they all get pushed up into the first.
That's really Jalen true.
Hurts, Jalen Hurts, who was mentioned by Mike Tomlin yesterday, because Tomlin was asked at his presser, are you in no man's land because you're not bad enough to be at the top of the draft to take one of these guys? He said, well, Lamar was taken at the bottom of the first round and Jalen Hurts was taken at the second. They're outliers. You don't see many like that because the second round quarterbacks all kind of get pushed up into the first. And then you have the third round quarterbacks, who are fifth round quarterbacks. Britter, for example. So, man, by the way, as we're speaking, guys, Quinn Ewers has declared. So throw his name in.
I saw that.
Yeah, I do not think he is a first-round quarterback. That is just me, but you never know. I think Jackson Dart probably goes before him, and Jackson Dart probably goes somewhere in the bottom half of the first round.
Andrew Siciliano joining us, play-by-play man for the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Does the Minnesota quarterback situation become a huge deal at draft time? In other words, what do they decide to do with Sam Darnold? And if they decide that they need to keep Sam Darnold, does J.J. McCarthy become available? And would you?
I don't think J.J. McCarthy will come available, period. I don't in any way believe that. I think the only way that would have been a conversation is if Sam lit it up in the postseason and they made it to New Orleans, maybe won. And then if that happened, then it's kind of like Joe Flacco expiring contract. Not necessarily the same, but you just go, all right, man, here's the check. Congratulations, you won the game show, right? Here it is. But it didn't happen that way. And look, Sam threw for 4,300 yards and threw 35 touchdowns. They won 14 games. I think he had 10 or 11 games, if passer rating is your thing, with 100 passer rate. And that's absurd. He had a great season. His last two games were bad. There's another way to say it. They blitzed the heck out of him. He couldn't deal with it, and it got ugly. I don't think those two games should totally discount his great season because he had a great season, but I do think it affects how much interest he has in the contract he could garner. If he had made a great playoff run and they decided to let him go, somebody would have paid him. I think the best case scenario for both of them now is to give – he played 1 year, $10 million this year – is to give him something modest, more than 10, certainly, and then say, Sam, here's another short-term deal, and it's going to be you and JJ next year, and we're going to figure it out. If he doesn't want that, if he thinks there's big free agent money elsewhere, then he'll leave and go get it, and they'll stick with Daniel Jones, who they put up on the active roster, so that if he were to leave, they'd actually get a pick in return, and you roll with him. Now, if I'm Sam Darnold, I'd go to the Steelers, to be honest with you.
It'd be a great spot for him, wouldn't it?
The thing is with Sam and the Browns, they can't go write a big check unless something changes dramatically. When I say can't, I'd be very surprised. They just don't have the wiggle room to go write the check that Darnold will likely commit or command on the free agent market.
Which might be 35 to 40 a year? which for a quarterback is good, but not not at the top of the heap.
I think during the season when he was heating up, a lot of people thought, well, just give him the Baker deal, meaning 35 a year roughly in Tampa. I don't know that that deal is still there. Never be stunned, though, by the numbers. When someone is willing to write a check. He can, look, someone said go to the Titans. Like, let's say they take whomever at number one. Sam Darnold could be the bridge guy there. I think he has earned more than just a bridge guy situation. But I don't know. I think Indy is the one. Indy is, to me, you go there, you play winning football. They have some weapons, and you hold off Anthony Richardson. And then next year we're thinking, all right, where does Anthony Richardson move on to?
Interesting.
All right, Andrew, let's look ahead to this weekend. Your thoughts on these games before we hit the conference championships. Who's going to get to the conference championship? Who do you like? Who do you not like? And I can go through them one by one, or if you want to do it off the top of your head.
So, you lead the show.
That's why I love working with you. Houston at Kansas City, my friend. Let's start there. Houston at Kansas City.
This game was played a couple of weeks ago, obviously, when we were where were we that week? We were in Cincinnati with the Bengals, right, I think? Mm-hmm. Trying to remember on what flight I was watching this one. And Kansas City just dominated them. That was the Tank Dell injury game. And the Texans fell in a rut, and they didn't climb out of it until they beat the Chargers last week. I think, look, Kansas City's clearly the better team. No one's going to beat them at home. However, the pass rushers that Houston has against a very suspect Kansas City tackle situation can make this interesting. Now, Pat Mahomes is a shapeshifter, and he practices the dark arts, and I would never bet against him. So I'm, for recreational purposes, saying no one's going to beat Kansas City. But it is interesting to see what they could do defensively, the Texans could do defensively.
Yeah, I think it wasn't week 18. It was the week after we played Kansas City. So, all right, let me fly through the rest of these. Washington, Detroit.
So, I'm a Jaden Daniels believer. I think they can do this.
Ooh.
I think this game is much closer. I don't know what the line is. Game is quite close. But I think offensively the Lions are too much and they win. And I think eventually it's a comfortable score, but it's an interesting ride.
All right, you got Kansas City. So Kansas City's in. Detroit's
chalk
in.
So far.
All right, so let's go. We got two more. Rams, a team you know, and Philly.
So I was at that game, not Monday, but when the Eagles were here 2 months ago. And the Eagles pummeled them. They outclassed them. They overpowered them. They ran them and ran them and ran them and threw them, and it was ugly. The Rams defense has taken a turn since then for the better, far better. They're going to put a lot of pressure on Jalen Hurts. I don't know if they can stop the run. If the Rams can stop the run, the Rams are on a heater. The Rams can win this game. They're going to make Jalen Hurts beat you. But I don't know that the Rams' run defense can hold up. Don't tell this to my Rams friends, but I'll take the Eagles.
Okay, and just pick a winner, Baltimore, Buffalo, because we got to go.
I'll take the Ravens.
There you go. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, buddy.
Goodbye, guys.
Good man.
Andrew Siciliano on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. Meredith is taking your phone calls, 216-474-0092. Dan Menigan, known Mike McCarthy hater, flying our ship today.
Is he?
Now I just say that because I want you to say nasty things about me.
I'd prefer Mike McCarthy truther. Maybe that's the better way to put it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how I like it better.
Well, you disagree with Micah Parsons. The Dallas Cowboys future Hall of Famer says it's devastating that Mike McCarthy is not going back to Dallas. Says he's obviously very sad. Everything he's done for our program, 3 straight 12-5 seasons, playoff appearances, great father, great coach, one of the winningest coaches.
Always held the door for everybody coming in.
Always been good to us.
Made sure there were clean towels in the gym.
Helped the ladies across the street. Did you ever see him do that?
A great coach like Mike Hurts from Micah Parsons.
Always let you borrow a pen.
Once watched him stop his car at like 50 miles an hour to let a turtle cross.
Had no issue with the two. Was real patient with the turtle.
No, actually, he was having a good day. He actually got out and helped the turtle.
Yeah.
And apparently, apparently the idea of, you know, the courting of Dion and Jason Witten as the heir apparent and everything else made, according to some reports, Mike McCarthy say, thanks, fellas, I'm out. And he called off the negotiations. Now, you don't probably do that unless you know you're going to be interviewing somewhere else, and he's interviewing with Chicago. That's supposed to happen today.
And by the way, remember, they wouldn't let him interview, even though they knew it was down to like
right.
the final days.
The Bears
that
asked.
Was his way of trying to figure out if they wanted him back a little bit, too, right?
Don't Mike's you? A Pittsburgh guy.
Yeah,
I could see him. I mean, going and working for the Halas family seems like it's a pretty solid situation. You have a good young quarterback there if you're Mike McCarthy to either develop or ruin, as Menigan might want to say. But I could see that happening. Saints also an interesting situation for him. I would think he ends up with one of those two gigs. Maybe Jacksonville. I don't know.
He'll end up at one of these jobs.
I would think Chicago is the spot for him.
He screams Chicago or Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but Tomlin's not going anywhere, is he?
Yeah, I know. But the fans would like for that to happen, I think, probably.
Go ahead, Dan.
Why would you want to trade out a coach that your fan base is screaming has a ceiling for a coach that you know has a ceiling?
Because they don't see that.
It feels like you're just kind of...
They don't see that. I think level-headed Steeler fan gets it, and they understand it. And they're like, okay, it could be worse. But, right. Man, I've heard a lot of, like... I was listening to the station overnight, like 5:30 this morning, and they're like, oh, it's just Tomlin's got to go.
Yeah, but can I ask?
It's got to go.
Let me follow up something Dan just said. A coach that has a ceiling. Which coaches don't?
Sean McVay.
Okay, that's one. And remember,
Andy Reid.
McVay was a guy that I said I would trade for.
Hey, listen, Bill Belichick had a ceiling, right? Right?
I mean, what?
Well, without Tom Brady, you could make the argument that yes.
That is the forever chicken and an egg.
Exactly right.
There are coaches. The Mike McCarthy problem that I will have is we have such a
Is Mike McCarthy Marty Schottenheimer, the modern day Marty?
That's a good way to put it. We have a long track record of what Mike McCarthy does. And there are a chunk of people who, for some reason, I think that Mike McCarthy is better than what he is. And Mike McCarthy is a fine NFL coach. He will come in, he will stabilize the ship, but you will hit a ceiling with Mike McCarthy. And if you look and make sure you know when that ceiling is coming, he's fine. But you will always look around and think, is there a better way to go about this than having Mike McCarthy there? That's the best way to describe it. It's not a hate of Mike McCarthy, it's a reality of Mike McCarthy. It's like, okay, Mike McCarthy's going to get me to this point. Can I find somebody to get me above that? Am I willing to move on to it? Or am I going to talk myself into the fact that Mike McCarthy is this and no more than this?
I'm just throwing out a fact here. Okay, ready? You're not going to like this fact.
Okay.
Mike McCarthy has won 61% of his games in his NFL career.
Oh, I know this stat.
No, you don't know.
Yeah, right in between Bill Walsh and Tom Landry.
You do know that stat.
I know the stat.
He's right ahead of Tom Landry, Sean McVay. And just behind Bill Walsh, Marty Schottenheimer, and Sean Payton. That's pretty good company, man.
Yeah, it is.
I'd take that here. And I don't mean the person. I mean the winning percentage and everything else. I'd be okay with a guy who can win me 12 games a year and give me a chance in the playoffs.
Enjoy your stagnant offense.
It wasn't stagnant when Dak was healthy.
It was stagnant even into last year. It's why they got throttled the way
that
they
did. Well, in the last year, they didn't have Dak. They're throwing out Cooper Rush.
No, I'm sorry. I meant the year previous.
Well, when they went 12-5?
2023,
when they went 12-5.
Yeah, and their defense, they got throttled.
Who's signing up for 12-5? 216-474-0092. Right here.
Listen.
I'm your boy.
Can we be honest that if you have a lot of great talent,
you ought to be able to win 10 games.
Yeah.
And Dallas has a boatload of great talent, and look where it's gotten them with Mike McCarthy at the helm.
Into the playoffs.
Congrats.
Okay.
Congratulations on your first round.
I think.
What's our goal again?
Troy Aikman, who I love listening to, has called McCarthy a great coach and thinks it's a terrible idea to get rid of him.
Yeah. I don't know. Nice.
That's nice because
Dan knows more than Troy when it comes to coaching the Cowboys.
I truly believe the only thing that can destroy a good talented team is bad coaching. It really is. It's the only. If you have a talented team and they're not selfish, then bad coaching is the only thing that can crush them. So Maybe Dan has a point.
There is a Mike McCarthy ceiling. Like, it's just...
But is he a bad coach?
I don't think he's a bad coach. There's just a ceiling. Like, you will hit a point where Mike McCarthy will get you to that point, and he will get you no further than that point. And if you're great with, like, hey, I'll win 11 games in the regular season and get throttled in the playoffs, then Mike McCarthy's your guy. Bring him on in. Love every last bit of having him.
22 playoff games, 11 wins, 11 losses.
Yeah. Ever since he got out of Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers and that one Super Bowl year, it has been... meh for Mike McCarthy. He'll win you a bunch of regular season games. Just get into the playoffs and get throttled, and all of you will look at each other and go, okay.
And that would get Marty Schottenheimer's statue here in Cleveland.
Yeah. If that's what you want, go get him.
I'm not saying for here. I just think he will be coaching next year if he wants to.
Yeah,
I think Chicago's going to hire him.
Sure. He'll be the Bears coach. They'll win 8 to 10 games next year and get throttled.
So in other words, he's their JB Bickerstaff.
That's a great way to put
will
it.
Will you spend 10 minutes on the air just setting yourself verbally on fire, saying that you're an idiot if he wins the Super Bowl in Chicago?
I mean, I don't even need to take 10 minutes to do that. I do that daily.
Oh, no. We would want to just
make
sure
that... I am an idiot. It's proof.
Well, we want it to linger, though. I got to give you more than 5 minutes.
You'll have to let it linger. Do you have to? Do you
let it linger?
Do you have to let it linger?
My friend Jeff and...
Do you?
You know I'm just such a fool.
Stop.
You are a fool. Yes.
My friend Jeff in Cleveland is a diehard Cowboys fan. His fantasy team is called America's Team. He sent me this text. First he said, how many playoff wins? Then he said, Dan and I know more than Troy. We don't want McCarthy. Glad you guys are doing so well.
Oh, such a fool for you. Yeah.
Got you wrapped around your finger.
Eric, stop. Eric Edholm, NFL.com.
No, I'm just in so deep on this thing. I'm just telling you, you know.
What quarterback does
such
he
a fool
like?
For this coach.
And would he take a quarterback at two? Which ones does he like?
Do you?
Hey, and we're going to find us a quarterback coming up in the noon hour. It's Baskin and Phelps.
Are you drinking cranberry juice?
With these clowns on the Fan.